John Shipton, father of Julian Assange.
Thank you for your welcome into Chicago. Myself and Gabriel Shipton, Julian's brother, are on a tour of the United States advocating that the charges against Julian, or the extradition order currently against Julian in the United Kingdom, be let lie fallow or quashed or just simply dropped.
So, since Julian has been held hostage, is the way I would see it, by U.S. Legal proceedings to try and bring him back to the United States, what have you personally been doing in order to help your son?
Well, for the last 3 years, I've been principally in Europe advocating, and the United Kingdom advocating, and Australia advocating. We were here in the US, in New York, in January. We made an approach through a friend to the President-elect's administration, and we received a message that, if possible, could we wait until after the inauguration procedure, which we did, and now we're back in the United States. We don't seek to meet Mr. President Biden, nor any of the administration officials, but we just seek to have private meetings with some of the staff, and also meetings, of course, with American citizens who are supportive, or those who can be supportive or would be supportive if they were a little more aware of the circumstances and the meaning of this extradition and charges against Julian Assange, the meaning of which, of course, is the truncation of the civil gold that the United States has, which we call the free speech, but is better known as the First Amendment. This, in Australia, our country, this is desired. In each election, people make proposals, enthusiastic proposals to government to have a First Amendment and a Bill of Rights. So we find that should Julian be extradited to the United States, it will finish completely any capacity or willingness to take a risk to comment upon national security information that is leaked or given, or as a matter of analysis found out. So severe and intimidating is the oppression. If I could just outline for a second that Julian has now been in one form or another of detention for 12 years, and every convention of asylum, every procedural regularity has been disobeyed. The due process has been broken, and regulations governing how you can go about claiming asylum, which was given to Julian, but the United Kingdom ignored it, or due process, which requires each side to follow, so the defendant and the prosecutor, to follow a series of regulations which the Crown Prosecuting Service and the Swedish Prosecuting Authority ignored, to the extent of formulating between themselves, that is the Crown Prosecuting Service of the UK and the Swedish Prosecuting Authority of Sweden, formulate a conspiracy whereby to ignore the regulations under which they both operate, to the extent, and this is all documented, to the extent of forcing Julian to stay in the embassy rather than following the conventions of asylum, which they are signatories to, and allowing Julian to take up his asylum.
Last time you saw Julian, can you talk about that and the conditions you saw him in?
Well, Belmarsh Prison outside of London is a maximum security prison, rather like the prisons, Supermax, down at Colorado, Florence, Colorado. So it's the equivalent of a...
Why do you mention that particular prison?
That's where Julian would be held should he be brought to the United States. He'd be held at Florence, Colorado, Supermax. And as the charges levelled against Julian are to print or receive classified material, Julian would be held automatically under SAMS. SAMS are special administrative measures. If I could briefly describe those to you, a special administrative measure means that you get one phone call a month to your family. If you miss out or if the number has changed, then you are punished by having no phone calls for 3 months. You spend 23 hours a day in your cell in solitary confinement. Then you're allowed 1 hour for exercise in a similar cell, exactly the same, except that it has nobody living in it and you can walk up and down in that cell. Then you're taken back to your cell. Your cell consists of 10 square feet. Has a wooden door and then a space of about 1 foot and then a steel door. The prisoners in the SA, the SAMs, are all in the same wing, and that wing is patrolled every half an hour to make sure that you don't commit suicide or attempt to commit suicide. Under these circumstances, the prisoners yell to have some form of communication with another prisoner. They bellow, shout and scream to be heard. Other prisoners bellow, shout and scream to be heard. And this cacophony echoes up and down the hallway where the SAMS prisoners are. Adding to this, prisoners that have been there 10 years have gone mad. So they bellow and scream just to let out the devils that have invaded their mind through years and years of solitary confinement. So this hellish atmosphere, this symphony of hell, echoes up and down the hallway, and every half an hour, a jailer will come around and inspect your cell through a slot, a small slot. You can just see his eye. He'll inspect your cell to see that you're not finding a way out of this interminable suffering. So that is, that you go on suffering the insufferable. It's a circumstance that brings shame to the federal government and its administration of justice in the United States.
Is the Belmarsh prison very different?
Belmarsh doesn't have a special administrative measures, but what it does have, as being a supermax prison or maximum security prison, is since COVID, 23 hours a day in your cell, because the COVID-19 infestation has affected the staff, and that means the reduction in amenities. And prisoners no longer, for example, are able to take regular exercise period because there's nobody to supervise. They're sick. And the infestation has moved into the prison population as well. I believe that one of the prisoners, a cell next to Julian, or next to Julian but one, has died from COVID. So those circumstances are that you more or less are in under the Istanbul Protocol, which governs solitary confinement. So under the Istanbul Protocol, you are in solitary confinement. To alleviate this, the prison governor allows telephone calls, so you can make a 10-minute telephone call. So if Julian rings me up after 10 minutes, the phone call is just automatically cut off.
He can do that, or he has to go through some procedure.
Since the COVID lockdown of the prison, they've expanded the opportunity of prisoners to make phone calls. However, you have to have money in the bank to do this. So you can't make a phone call unless your account with the people who operate the telephone system is in credit. Once then, that is arranged by, you have to give money to your lawyers, and your lawyers pass on that money to the people who operate the phone system, and then you can make a phone call. Yeah.
Julian's desire to reveal truth. I heard you mention that to be the case.
Well, there's sort of three elements to that. As far as, from the outside, because I don't know what's in Julian's mind, that is only a privilege given to God. From the outside, Julian has always liked truthfulness and always loathed injustice, or liked to see justice. Now those, and the third one is the attribution of knowledge, or the gaining of knowledge brings freedom. So those three elements from the outside motivate Julian. The third is that the road to freedom always will require knowledge. In Shelley's poem Prometheus Unbound, Prometheus gives to human beings the gift of knowledge, and that knowledge brings to people freedom. So that is Prometheus unbound from the rock, and that applies to us. So any conversation with our friends and the development of policy, or understanding what government is doing, or contributing to policy and government, or resisting policy of government, or insisting amongst us that the government follow its constitutional requirements, requires knowledge. And with that knowledge brings us freedom to act. And in acting, we improve the circumstances of our community, the understanding that we can give to each other, and also the overall quality of the polity or our community. It's a wonderful thing. So that is, I guess, the fundamental vitality of what Julian did. Now, how to do that? Well, in the first place, the internet brought to us the ability to access a site, a website, for example, WikiLeaks, and on that website to store information in a way that anybody with access to a computer can get access to it. So you can go to WikiLeaks or other sites that hold information that you seek, and you can have a look. You can download, and you can do the analysis and research. You can enter into forums of discussion on that information, and consequently you improve your own understanding. That's one. The general understanding of the community is benefited by this. That's the first. The second is providing that information to WikiLeaks. For example, it's alleged that Chelsea Manning provided WikiLeaks and Julian with the Afghan war files, the Iraq war files, collateral murder, and the Guantanamo Bay files. So having protection, if you're a person who gives the leak to a site like WikiLeaks. Having protection requires anonymity. You want to be private because, you know, governments get a bit vengeful and they get a bit full of themselves and they get a bit insecure if we're understanding what they're doing. So they're likely to run around and put the manacles on you and throw you in a dungeon. So anonymity for leakers is really vital. So the use of Tor or other methods, so simple methods, you know, like putting a secret in, for example, a CD cover and posting it to a post office box, for example, or the use of Tor if you want to do so, if you want to give your information over the internet. Tor is an anonymizer. So those two elements, holding as a library all of the information that WikiLeaks has received, checking to see that the information that WikiLeaks received is truthful and has integrity, and then making that access searchable so that you can go there and have a look, and protecting those who give the information and do this service to the people of the world, and in this case, this great service to the people of the United States. And as you can see, over the period of 10 years, with the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, the withdrawal of troops from Iraq, the closure on the cusp of the closure of Guantanamo Bay, and the removal of troops from Syria, you can see that the precipitation of this moving into the United States community, polity, populace, moving into the entirety of the United States population has brought about the insistence upon government, the insistence by the people of the United States that these exercise of these powers must stop, and the spending of the treasures of the United States on fruitless wars must stop, and that those treasures be spent on infrastructure. So I see that there's proposals of infrastructure programs in the United States to rebuild the infrastructure here. So these are the direct precipitations over time of leaks and having access to leaks to improve our understanding of government and insist the government does things our way, not their way.
You have mentioned that leaks have stopped wars and have had a number of benefits.
Yes, okay. So if you... It's okay, I'll mention three. The first, leaks can prevent war or stop war. In 2006, now this happens to soldiers. If soldiers go into these war situations and they lose their attachment to family and community as a consequence and become fearful, they commit crimes. So in 2006 in Baghdad in Iraq, a group of soldiers went into an Iraqi home and murdered the entire occupants, the mums and dads and children and aunties and uncles, the entire extended family. Contemplating this crime, the soldiers called in an airstrike and obliterated from the earth all evidence of those people's lives and at the same time their crime. This was written up in a cable from the ambassador in Iraq, the US ambassador in Iraq, to the Department of State. When the cables were released into the public, the Iraqi government gathered up its courage, seeing what would had happened, gathered its courage, and refused to renew the Status of Forces agreement with the United States Army and the Allies, one of which was Australia. Consequently, the troops had to be withdrawn from Iraq because there was no Status of Forces agreement.
That would have protected soldiers from their actions, crimes under Iraqi law.
Yes, or as crimes under, United States laws. United States is one of the prime signatories to the Geneva Conventions on Warfare. So it serves to deceive the people of the United States, and it serves to deceive the Iraqi people. And as a consequence, anyway, that stopped the war. Status of Forces agreement, refusal to renew it, stopped a war. Very important. The next is, in the case of the United Kingdom, they had a mandate over the Chagos Islands. They're a group of islands in the Indian Ocean. The Pentagon and Washington wanted an Air Force base in the Chagos Island, which is now named Diego Garcia. The United Kingdom removed the entire population of the Chagos Islands and dumped the poor people in Mauritius. On the release of the cables, the people of the Chagos Islands in Mauritius and their lawyers had enough information to bring a case to the International Court of Justice against the United Kingdom for dispossessing them of their lands. In that case, the Chagos Islanders prevailed, and the United Kingdom appealed, and again the Chagos Islanders prevailed. So it brought the beginnings of justice to the Chagos Islanders. In the third case, the release of the Guantanamo Bay files allowed a great American lawyer named Clive Stafford Smith. He established an NGO named Reprieve. It allowed him to have enough evidence to move to free men and children as well, from Guantanamo Bay. I remind everybody that there were 22 children held in Guantanamo Bay. Those innocent men and children, the files that were released allowed Clive and his lawyer friends to negotiate with the administration of Guantanamo Bay a number of hearings whereby prisoners who were innocent were released and sent home. That's important. So there's three examples of what a leak can bring about: the end of a war or the stopping of wars, the bringing of justice to people who have been badly treated by one government or a corporation, and the bringing of relief and justice to those prisoners who are falsely accused and locked up in Guantanamo Bay, which does not fall under the regulations that it would fall under if it was on the mainland of the United States.
You mentioned corporations. You said you were familiar with Alex Carey, who wrote the book Taking the Risk Out of Democracy. Can you...
I knew Alex as an acquaintance.
Alex Carey.
An Australian. He was at the University of New South Wales, and I was at the University of New South Wales as an architecture student at the time. He, of course, was a man older than I and very elevated in his intelligence and his position. But contemporaneously, as of now, we see that there's a seamless flow between the government, the federal government, and, for example, Facebook. And another example would be what they call Google. There's this, I think it's called Alphabet now. There's a seamless flow of whatever the government requires, the Google will provide to them in the analysis of our data. In the taking of our data, it's not really legal. However, no governments benefit so much from the sharing of data that Google collects, or the data that Facebook collects. For myself, I like the fact that we can use a facility like Facebook and communicate with each other and put up pictures of our children or insights into, you know, we can use it as a forum. I don't like the fact that people like Mark Zuckerberg have an attachment to government, and I don't like the fact that all of these organisations, the six major corporations that provide people in the United States and us in Australia with news, the six major corporations and the tech platforms all depend upon government franchise or warrant in one way or another. Google depends upon the regulation and administration of certain bandwidth on the internet. And so at any time, the government has the power to restrict or expand Google's area of activity. And consequently, Google will do whatever the government asks. I think, actually, if I remember correctly, the CIA was involved in, at a distance, involved in the creation of Google, its beginning and its support. The same with Facebook. It depends on government warrant, government regulation, and government acceding to the use of public facilities in order to run its business. These are really public facilities and public services and ought to be administered in the interest of the public rather than this this gruesome, if I could use this gruesome wedding between the Facebook corporation and certain elements of the federal government. It's a gruesome wedding, which...
It's sometimes called neoliberalism. It's been in its ascendancy for the last 60 years following the Powell memo. Government no longer provides for the people. In the meantime, the corporations, which Alex Carey was warning us about...
Well, you know, just... one last comment. Lewis Mumford, the great American historian, in his book History of Cities, back in the 1960s, wrote that the belief in markets is simply a belief in providence. And it's also, importantly, removes from us, the belief in markets, removes from us our feeling of a capacity to involve ourselves in the creation of our societies and the distribution of resources therein.
Yeah. Thank you.